One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Cryptids spotted in wartime are quite strange. There are so many tales of these creatures, and sometimes they continue to terrorize humanity even after the fighting has stopped. When the dead and wounded are still fresh on the ground, they walk the battlefield, harvesting the life that remains. UFO sightings are common, and sometimes hazardous. In parts of the Middle East, tales of giants on the fields of war abound. And in Vietnam, entire troops of what seemed to be militant Sasquatch appear to patrol the jungle, hurling both rocks and grenades. I'm your ghost, John. This is the 21 CD Podcast. Let's get into it.
Hello, citizen. Be advised this content creator is human and is therefore subject to human error. Remember, trust your government, consume appropriate content, and be cautious of all conspiracy theories as they are the tools of the rebellion.
Hey guys, welcome to the 21 CD Podcast. As always, I'm your ghost, John. If this is your first time here, welcome. Before we get started, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, you can find 21 CD on platforms like Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else. And if you're listening to me on a podcast platform like Spotify, Apple, and everywhere else, don't forget that you can find me on YouTube as well. All updates, announcements, and other cool stuff relating to the podcast are, of course, going to be announced on the Instagram, which you can find by looking up 21 CD Podcast. I also have a Buy Me a Coffee. If you guys want to support me, that's how you do it. You know I love my coffee, and that's currently the only way that this endeavor of mine is monetized. Thanks in advance. I'm definitely not asking for your money, but thank you for those of you who have bought me a coffee and do so in the future. The last Cryptids of Wartime episode did so good that a bunch of you were just like, we've got to get a part two on Cryptids of Wartime. So that's what I'm doing this week. Sorry I missed last Thursday. I have had a crazy couple weeks. I'm actually getting off my almost a week straight without a day off, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but it feels like a lot right now because I just started a brand new job, so everything's a little bit chaotic right now, but we're getting into the groove, and I'm hoping to start getting two episodes out a week again. But yeah, let's get right into this, because I know you guys don't like to hear me talk too much. So welcome to Cryptids of Wartime 2. I wanted to put these guys in episode 1, but I completely spaced on it and ended up not putting them in episode in Cryptids of Wartime 1. But the Rock Apes of Vietnam. So the Rock Apes, or I'm probably going to butcher this, Batututs, as referred to in Vietnamese, indeed occupy a fascinating niche within the realm of cryptids, primarily due to the frequency and consistency of sightings reported by American troops during the Vietnam War. Like, I did not have a hard time finding stories of these rock apes being told by soldiers who fought in the Vietnam War. Unlike many globally recognized cryptids like the Loch Ness Monster or, you know, whatever, Mothman, the rock apes of Vietnam have garnered less widespread attention, yet their stories offer compelling narratives about mysterious creatures that have intrigued both soldiers and cryptid enthusiasts alike. So I've got some notes on these guys. Soldiers during the Vietnam War described these creatures as being small, bipedal, and covered in hair, with some accounts noting aggressive behavior. The rock apes were reported to exhibit curious and sometimes confrontational actions towards humans, including throwing stones and shouting, which added to their mystique and led to numerous accounts among military personnel. The dense jungles of Vietnam, characterized by their rugged terrain and thick foliage, provided an ideal setting for such creatures to elude definitive discovery, which, of course, only adds to their mystery. And some of the soldiers would toss grenades into an area where they believed these rock apes were, or where these rock apes were shouting at them from, or whatever, and the grenades would actually be being tossed back at the soldiers. It's kind of crazy. From a scientific perspective, because of course science always has to have its say, the existence of such creatures remains unsubstantiated, with no physical evidence like corpses or clear photographs to support the claims. Skeptics argue that under the stress and duress of war, soldiers might misidentify known animals or experience heightened states of alertness that could lead to mistaken interpretations of natural phenomena, such as apes. Additionally, a lack of tangible evidence post-war, despite advances in technology and, of course, like increased exploration, further fuels this skepticism. But where there's skepticism, I abound, and I believe that having experienced a bit of stress and duress myself, it's probably not likely that every single one of these soldiers, all of which report seeing the same thing, was experiencing some sort of mistaken interpretation of a small monkey throwing rocks, shouting at them, surprise attacking them, ambushing them, throwing grenades at them, stuff like that. However, it's worth noting that the region's biodiversity could potentially hide undiscovered species, as new animals and plants are periodically identified in less explored areas of the world. The possibility, however remote, that a small undiscovered primate could exist in the dense Vietnamese jungles cannot be entirely dismissed. You know, we're finding new creatures all the time. Lizards and frogs and fish. We're finding them all the time. But it does seem less likely that we would be coming across some sort of ape at this point, just because of how much research we have done on the biomes all over the world. Not impossible, but probably not likely, which only furthers my opinion that these are probably cryptids of some sort of supernatural or paranormal origin. Despite the absence of physical evidence, such as bodies or definitive photographs, the widespread and numerous sightings of these creatures during the war do justify further investigation, in my opinion. The name rock apes stems from their alleged habit of throwing rocks, typically as a form of retaliation. Reports also include instances where they purportedly threw back grenades at those who attacked them, like I already said. Descriptions of these creatures from the jungle depicted them as having sort of a robust, muscular body with noticeable bellies, and their skin was largely covered in reddish hair, but not their feet, hands, knees, or faces. Those were all hairless and contributed to their simian appearance. They were known to inhabit secluded areas of the jungle, living in communities away from human settlements, and generally not interacting with the surrounding human populace. However, the arrival of American troops in their habitats seemed to provoke a sense of threat to their territories, leading them to adopt an aggressive stance towards any perceived encroachments, because the Vietnam War was a very dirty war fought in dense jungle most of the time. So there's probably all sorts of area that were occupied and trampled and shot up and destroyed deep in the far reaches of Vietnam's jungle that previously had never been touched. So who knows what's really back there? These creatures, referred to as rock apes, were not timid about launching attacks on anybody who accidentally encountered them. Predominantly active during twilight hours or at night, they were often seen moving in groups, which I gotta admit is similar to, say, chimpanzees and other groups of apes, but some of the other characteristics that these things were portraying was not so similar to primates. To American soldiers who encountered them so regularly that they became a familiar presence, these beings were humorously dubbed batututs. And I've heard that that means bathtubs, and I think it's slang because of their bellies, which were, like we already kind of said, kind of roundish, kind of fat. And they were seen as yet another element of the jungle's diverse wildlife. When soldiers went there, they were just kind of like, what are these creatures? Even Viet Cong and NVA troops reported sightings, leading to an organized expedition in 1974 by General Hong Minh Tha to capture or kill one, which ended, of course, in failure without finding any concrete evidence whatsoever. Another expedition was launched by Professor Vo Quai, I don't know how to say it, from Vietnam National University, and that didn't yield any results either. However, in 1970, Professor Tran Hong Viet from Hanoi's University discovered unusual humanoid footprints in the jungle and made casts of them, though no further evidence was ever found. The rock apes reportedly displayed little fear of humans, often startling soldiers who stumbled upon them, mistaking them for enemy patrols due to their human-like appearance and the close quarters of these encounters. Patrols of, like, soldiers would be going through the jungles, and they would literally find themselves face-to-face with these rock apes, like, really close to each other. And the apes never showed any, I call them apes just because that's what they're calling them. I, of course, think they're something else. But they never showed any signs of fear or anything like that, which is something that is not indicative of, say, a primate. This lack of fear could be attributed to their isolated habitats, some say, where human encounters were rare, possibly leading them to view humans as non-threatening. But considering there was a huge war going on, I kind of doubt that. Or perhaps their size made them perceive humans as too insignificant to be a threat. I also don't think that's really a good point, because there's all sorts of large animals that are afraid of humans. In one noted incident, a large group of rock apes allegedly attacked a squad of Marines. and I have a story about that a little bit later. Skeptics suggest the phenomenon could be explained by hallucinations fueled by the high-stress, dangerous environment of war, potentially exacerbated by marijuana use, though it's not a hallucinogenic drug, so that would be kind of strange. While LSD could induce such hallucinations, it was not commonly used by soldiers. However, these stories were commonly told by soldiers, so it's probably not drugs. I'm just going to throw it out there. This perspective argues that the extreme conditions of war could have heightened the propensity for illusions, with the mental strain and substance use priming individuals for such experiences, despite the lack of direct evidence supporting the existence of rock apes. I'm just not buying some of these explanations that they have. It definitely feels like all of these explanations are just trying to cover up what feels like widespread cryptid sightings. So here's a couple written stories. In 69, I spent my whole tour in the bush, the Iron Triangle. One night, in ambush position, I had last guard duty before dawn. We were positioned on the outside edge of a tree line. About 15 minutes into my watch, I heard loud movement coming from a ways in the trees. As they got closer, I determined it to be a troop of monkeys. But as they got closer, these were really big monkeys. They started making loud noises like they were yelling and just tearing up the jungle. As the twilight became brighter, I could see trees being shook, big trees that no human would be able to shake. I had a starlight scope mounted on my 16, but was never able to get a glimpse of what they were. There was so much racket going on, I wondered why the noise didn't wake any of the other guys. They kept getting closer. I wondered if they knew that we were there, or they maybe smelt us. But they were so close, I took the safety off the daisy-chained claymores and was on the edge of blowing them when all of a sudden they just quit. It was lighter now, and I would have been able to see them, but they just vanished back into the jungle. It was so quiet that it was eerie. One thing was for sure. If they got a hold of a human, I'm sure he would have been shredded. I've always thought about that. What if they got just a little bit closer? How many would I have killed because I was certainly loaded for bear? Another one goes like this. These are all from like soldiers who fought in Vietnam. Rock apes are the real thing. I saw a band of them up on Carley Ridge in Quang Nam province in the spring of 1970. It was nightfall, and I saw them through a starlight scope. 10 to 15 of them headed away from us up a steep incline. They weren't Viet Cong because they walked as a pack, side by side in the jungle, and not in any type of military line. They all looked to be very broad-bodied and up to 5 feet tall. I've got another one here. I spent my whole tour in the bush in Vietnam. Have seen them both alive and dead. Only thing I can say, I never seen them attack anyone. Had to kill one coming into lines one night. Never thought much about them other than that they were apes. Yes, they did walk upright, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall. Saw them mostly around the rock pile. Heard a lot of different stories about them in Nam, like the throwing of rocks, but never seen that myself. In my unit, I would say that over 3/4 of the guys have seen them. As much as us Marines smell, they smell worse. Really interesting, because a lot of people claim to be able to smell Sasquatch. That he gives off some kind of musk that is undeniable. So that's an interesting correlation. Here's another story. For what it's worth, I had a friend who served in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot and a medic. But several years ago, we were watching some old videos that he had digitalized of flights that he had taken into and out of the bush. He was smiling and reminiscing as we watched the videos. Being a Bigfoot enthusiast, I asked him if he had ever seen a rock ape while stationed there. His smile melted away and he looked at me with a flat expression and said, "Well, I never saw one myself, but many of my friends did. There is no way this man would ever lie about such a thing." He went on to tell me that many in his platoon had seen them in some of the most remote areas. He had only heard large monkeys yelling and shaking trees on one occasion that he could not otherwise explain. and had been a part of a rock-throwing incident on an overnight rescue when they were flying in to evacuate wounded soldiers. Some had definitely observed these apes up close in their scopes, my friend said, so witnesses may still be out there to tell their stories. You can't discount all the soldier encounters from Vietnam. These men are proud military heroes and not apt to lie. I know my friend never would have. And the last one that I have for today is, I served with 1st Marine Division in I Corps in northern Vietnam. When troop withdrawals began, we had members of 3rd Marine Division transferred to our unit. One particular Marine by the name of Paget told me about the rock apes. They saw them all the time. He said that one time a rock was thrown at them from the apes. All the Marines responded by throwing back. Paget said that that was a big mistake. The apes bombarded the Marines with rocks before they could rush out of the area. So we're seeing some pretty crazy Sasquatch correlations here. Obviously, the size is a little bit smaller, right, than what we imagine or think that Sasquatch is. But you have maybe a smaller version of a Sasquatch with the smell, the musk that they put off, the sort of aggression that we experience when you are in their territory. We have the rock throwing, the yelling, and the knocking. We have all sorts of stuff that is very indicative of Sasquatch. And these stories that I shared, I had to stop, like, finding them, like, because there were so many of them. So I just picked 4 random ones, but there were tons of these accounts of Marines seeing these things in the jungles of Vietnam. Pretty crazy stuff. So if any of you are fans of Tales from the Grid Square, then you guys may recognize some of the following stories. They focus on giants that soldiers have allegedly seen in the Middle East. Much like the stories of the rock apes, there are a ton of these stories of giants in the Middle East. Like, again, like, I had to stop writing them down because there were just so many that it would take episode upon episode to cover them all. So there's quite a few of them, which, in my opinion, just gives them all the more validity. So we're going to go over some of them here. These encounters, reported by some sources to have occurred during the deployments of service members to Afghanistan, were recently summarized on the Havoc Journal website, dedicated to veterans, news, and issues. These accounts originally appeared in Tales from the Grid Square, a collection of military encounters with the supernatural, authored by Nick Orton. He's the guy who wrote the book, and he's writing more books. They're pretty cool books. If you guys haven't checked out Tales from the Grid Square, you should really check it out. It's all these supernatural and paranormal experiences that service members have experienced. Orton wrote on Havoc Journal, during the war, many members of the U.S. military and coalition forces would experience events that defied explanation, such as UFOs, cryptids, and ghosts. Afghanistan held many mysteries, witnessed by those who served there, whether terrifying or truly astonishing. One of the most terrifying encounters involved the giant of Kandahar, a creature described as a biblical cryptid, which special forces stumbled upon in 2002, engaged in giant-sized activities like cooking and minding its own business. The story of the giant of Kandahar is probably not only one of the most famous stories of cryptids in Afghanistan, but perhaps one of the most famous cryptid stories of all time. Army officers have recounted tales from the early 2000s of entire troops mysteriously disappearing in the Afghan mountains, leaving behind their equipment in caves with no sign of the soldiers. There's also a persistent rumor involving a giant figure possessing 2 sets of teeth who impaled a soldier with a spear when threatened in his cave. Allegedly, a squad armed with high-powered rifles responded by unleashing 30 seconds of continuous gunfire to bring down the giant. According to the legend, the military then transported the deceased giant in a helicopter, and he vanished without a trace. Of course, Furthermore, the story was suppressed, and soldiers were reportedly required to sign non-disclosure agreements. This Kandahar giant, as described by Mr. K, is said to stand at a towering 13 feet tall and have two sets of fangs. The creature used a spear to fatally injure one of the Special Forces personnel. And this Mr. K is quite elusive, but that doesn't make him a liar. A lot of people doubt the story of the giant of Kandahar, but who knows? There's also been Clinton emails, allegedly, where they discussed finding Nephilim and Elohim-related cryptids. According to a website called All That's Interesting, the remaining troops eliminated the giant in under 30 seconds with relentless gunfire. The military allegedly removed the giant's body using a Chinook helicopter, which that's the one with the double blades, and it has been kept hidden since, with no sightings ever again reported. Some accounts even suggest that the giant may have been as tall as 15 feet, had six fingers, wore leather moccasins, emitted a foul odor, and appeared suddenly from the cave, fatally striking the soldier with his spear in that fashion. One report mentioned the squad was armed with full-auto M4 carbines and M107 Barrett anti-material rifles firing 50 caliber ammunition. This level of firepower, concentrated on a single target for even 1 second, let alone 30, would be highly destructive. And just to put it out there, for those who don't really know much about firearms, a 50 caliber bullet turns a human being to pink mist, pretty much no matter where they get hit. Conspiracy theorists circulated the story, leading fact-checking outlet Snopes to investigate in 2016, but Snopes is just about as reliable as the Smithsonian, and they're constantly covering up and censoring the truth. Unsurprisingly, Pentagon officials told Snopes that they had no record of such an incident, which is obviously the expected answer. This only fueled the conspiracy theories, with skeptics suggesting that this is precisely what somebody hiding a 13-foot-tall body would say. 100%. Like, if you guys don't know yet, don't trust the government. Like, if you're unsure of whether or not to trust the government at this point in 2024, the answer is no, just don't do it. Don't trust them. They probably have 13-foot-tall bodies, and that's probably the least shocking thing that they're hiding, so do with that what you will. Despite the lack of official confirmation, the supernatural tale gained mainstream attention when it was featured on Coast to Coast AM, a radio show hosted by the famous and unfortunately late Art Bell. Orton continued, "There are many accounts of soldiers who have reported seeing massive humanoids, towering over regular men in Afghanistan. These stories exist but are hard to come by, as not many are willing to come forward and claim they saw a giant in the mountains of Afghanistan." And this is where him and I differ a little bit, because I was finding so many stories of this, especially by people who live in Afghanistan, not just soldiers. But perhaps there is something truly massive out there. In his post, Orton shares several other tales of gigantic encounters allegedly collected from military personnel, including one involving the Giant of Kunar, a massive being seen by an infantry team leader during a deployment between 2008 and 2009. One night, while observing a village, the soldier used a thermal scope and spotted a large heat signature. He initially thought it was a group of Taliban fighters. Suddenly, the heat signature stood up as a single being, towering over the surrounding trees. The giant moved slowly and calmly, but with incredible speed, walking parallel to the soldier's position before disappearing along a nearby spur. The soldier reportedly did not share this encounter with many others, but remembered it vividly after hearing about similar stories on the Coast to Coast radio show, as one would if they had witnessed a giant towering above the tree line. I don't think that's something that would be easy to forget. The soldier speculated, "I think that's what I saw, a member of an ancient race of giants that descended from fallen angels. Or it could be something like Sasquatch. I'm not sure." Now, in my opinion, these giants that we speak of are the Nephilim, okay? And for those who don't know much about what that word means, I'll enlighten you. Regular listeners of this podcast are pretty familiar with, at this point, with what the Nephilim are and how they relate to the Elohim and what I believe on that matter. But we've got new people stopping in every single day, and this is one of my favorite topics to talk about, so I don't mind going over it again and again. But essentially, the Nephilim were the offspring, and probably still are, if there are still some around, they are the offspring of the original fallen angels, the Watchers, led by Samyaza, who rebelled at Mount Hermon, and alleging that there is some truth to the Book of Enoch. Okay, some people don't really like to lean on the Book of Enoch because it is, I guess, not considered Bible canon, but either way, they all gathered atop the mountain to pledge an oath to mate with human women and defy the Creator, according to this story, the Creator being God. As a consequence of this pact, their children, the Nephilim, turned out to be destructive and savage beings, and these Nephilim are giants. Again, this is all alleging that the Book of Enoch is true, but regardless of whether it is or not, Nephilim and Elohim are heavily referenced. You know, these fallen watchers, they're all mentioned in the Bible, okay, in Bible canon. They're not something that you have to read the Book of Enoch to research or hear about. And in the Bible, it doesn't necessarily talk about this sort of ritualistic way that they rebelled against Yahweh, God. It more just mentions the fact that the Elohim, the fallen angels, the watchers, fell to earth and had their way with human women, and these abominable giants are kind of the byproduct of that. Each of the Watchers shared forbidden knowledge with humanity, stemming from their angelic heritage. Among them, Azazel was known for teaching humans the arts of weaponry, warfare, cosmetics, and body manipulation. As a result, Azazel was particularly held responsible by God and was cast into darkness beneath the desert, somewhere where he remains in isolation until the Day of Judgment. He's still there, according to what I believe. The Nephilim, on the other hand, became destructive forces on Earth. They ruled as mighty kings who not only fought amongst themselves, but also engaged in acts of cannibalism and the consumption of human blood. They warred with regular humans. They destroyed the land. They are probably, you know, partially to blame for some of these strange cryptids that we have running around. This behavior is believed by many to be one reason why God expressly forbade the consumption of blood, by the way. Due to their savage and corrupt actions, as well as their leading of humanity astray, God dispatched a host of heavenly beings to exterminate the Nephilim, while their fallen Watcher fathers watched. Subsequently, a number of the Watchers themselves have also been imprisoned in darkness until the Day of Judgment, by the way. There's a number of fallen angels, of these Watchers, that have been defeated in spiritual warfare and are effectively prisoners of war, prisoners of this spiritual war that has taken over this planet and this, probably this universe, but at least this planet. And make no mistake, though, there are still others crawling the face of the earth, and there are still others waiting their time to be revealed, awaiting their time to be revealed. According to the Book of Enoch, this prison is located in Antarctica, or at least hinted to be located in Antarctica, which is just a fun little tidbit and not something I'm saying I firmly believe in, but this world is crazy, so who knows. Although it is believed that most of the Nephilim were destroyed in the flood of Noah, some theories propose a second incursion of fallen angels after the flood, which is alluded to in Genesis 6:4. And others believe that the Nephilim went underground. Some believe that they were able to utilize portals or phase into other dimensions that allowed them to escape from the cataclysm. There's really no way to know for sure how they survived, but many believe that they did indeed survive somehow and avoided extinction. Throughout history, the mythologies and pantheons of various ancient civilizations, such as the Titans, Anunnaki, Apkallu, Baal Hamon, and others, were influenced by the stories of the Watchers and their Nephilim offspring, such as the Raphaim and Anakim, who were later personified as figures like Zeus, Thor, Theseus, and other gods like that. Gods and demigods. These are all Elohim, Anunnaki, and Nephilim. When people say that these old gods don't exist, I don't necessarily align with that. I think that these old gods do exist and have been leading the world astray for a very long time. That is pretty much the whole point of their existence. But that's a completely different episode. I would love to talk about it. I will in a future episode, but we've got to move on because I have an insane cryptid that until I started researching for this episode, I had never heard of. And it might be one you've never heard of either. It brings us back to the mysterious world of the Cherokee, which you guys know I love to visit. And we're talking about the Raven Mocker in Cherokee mythology. It's a malevolent entity that preys on the elderly, sick, wounded, and dying, stealing their life force. And this one is a little bit different because it's not directly related to warfare, but it does prey on victims of wars and battles, and there have also been many battles on behalf of the Cherokee to attempt to exterminate this thing. So, because of those reasons, I felt like it's a cool addition to this episode. Now, typically the Raven Mockers take on the appearance of elderly individuals, but when pursuing a victim, they transform into a fiery shape with the cries of a raven and strong winds. After tormenting and ultimately killing their prey, they consume the heart, leaving no visible marks. This act is believed to extend their own lifespan, adding a year for every year the victim would have otherwise lived. Similar to the Banshee, the sound of the Raven Mocker is an omen of imminent death. While they were usually invisible when feeding, those possessing strong spiritual abilities can detect them. Raven Mockers are both feared and envied by other witches in Cherokee folklore, and their bodies may be exploited by these witches even after death. They are seen as figures akin to the angel of death, menacing and supernatural in nature. The legend suggests that Raven Mockers fell to earth like shooting stars, or like the fallen angels that we just talked about. They possess significant supernatural powers, making them feared by witches, demons, and poltergeists, as they exist beyond the earthly realm. And this is interesting because we have to remember that cultures across the world experience the same things in different ways. So obviously, the Cherokee weren't influenced by, let's just say, Thor or Odin or any of these old gods, but they probably did experience evil spirits in some way. And one of those ways may very well have been the Raven Mocker. The name Raven Mocker derives from the cry that they emit while in flight, which resembles a raven's call. Their flight pattern resembles that of a shooting star, appearing as a ball of sparks. These creatures are ageless and seek out individuals on their deathbeds, consuming their hearts to steal the remaining time that they have left on Earth, effectively absorbing their life force. It is unclear how long that they can continue this existence, but it's believed to possibly be indefinitely. They may also harvest body parts from the deceased to replace their own decaying limbs. Their appearance is that of extremely elderly beings, like we already said, which makes it very difficult to discern their gender. They possess a piercing scream, the ability to fly, and nails as sharp as surgical blades. If a raven mocker is disrupted during their life stealing or feeding, the victim may become infected and eventually transform into a raven mocker themselves. Certain talismans can be used to detect the presence of these raven mockers, but a lot of the details on how this works are kept secret by the Cherokee. This is not a foreign concept for the Cherokee. Components like bones and feathers from an owl tied with leather rope in a particular way will tremble when near a raven mocker, they believe. The scent of evergreen smoke repels them. While they can be killed through fire or being impaled on ash wood struck by lightning, as well as through starvation. Very strange stuff here. You can kind of tie some of the similarities to the skinwalkers, which are other Cherokee witches. Cherokee raven mockers possess unique traits and behaviors that distinguish them as feared entities in Cherokee folklore. Recognizing these traits is crucial for identifying and protecting oneself from these malevolent beings. Throughout Cherokee history, battles have been waged against raven mockers, which involved both physical and spiritual confrontations against these formidable entities. These encounters were not only individuals struggling, but often collective efforts involving warriors, medicine men, and the entire Cherokee community. They would effectively be forced to wage war and hunt down these raven mockers because they were such a threat. Strategies employed in these battles varied depending on the available knowledge and resources. They encompassed physical combat, spiritual rituals, and the assistance of medicine men in confronting the raven mockers. A common tactic involved the use of talismans infused with Cherokee medicine to unveil the true forms of raven mockers, which rendered them vulnerable. In some cases, Cherokee warriors embarked on perilous journeys into the spirit world to confront raven mockers on their home turf. So here we have a little bit of dimension stuff. We have this idea that these raven mockers are not actually from this realm, not actually from this dimension. And we have Cherokee warriors going to a different realm to hunt them down. This is very similar with how we think of Dogman and Sasquatch and a bunch of these other cryptids that seem to disappear quickly without a trace. Why is that happening? Probably because they're able to shift into other dimensions. It would appear that the raven mocker is kind of on the same page. Guided by ancestral wisdom, these brave warriors relied on their spiritual strength in their battles against these malevolent entities. The battles against raven mockers were intense and grueling, with Cherokee warriors risking their lives to protect their communities from these malevolent forces. Success in these battles not only meant saving a single life, but also safeguarding the entire Cherokee nation from the nefarious intentions of raven mockers. If a wounded Cherokee warrior or another facing death or sickness somehow initially escapes the clutches of the raven mocker, it may return in time. So it was very important to kill them. The raven mocker is notorious for its sadistic and merciless nature, deriving great satisfaction from tormenting and ultimately killing its victims. This malevolent being takes particular pleasure in a gruesome method. It lifts its victims from their beds using its beak and hurls them against walls and onto the floor to hasten their demise. These attacks result in broken bones and ruptured internal organs, leading to a swift and agonizing death for the victim. Swift and agonizing. Definitely. The Raven Mocker's intention is to terminate its prey as rapidly and painfully as possible. This serves a specific purpose, to prevent the victim from lingering in the world and wasting their remaining life force. If the victim survives for too long, the Raven Mocker won't be able to steal the remaining life and incorporate it into its own. Therefore, delivering a quick but excruciating death is not an act of mercy by the creature, but a crucial part of its own survival strategy. Once the Raven Mocker's prey has met its demise, the creature wastes no time in seizing what it desires. It viciously tears open the corpse, using its beak and the talons on its feet, proceeding to feast on the heart, vital organs, and even the victim's blood. Some accounts suggest that this gruesome act leaves no visible marks on the body, yet the heart is entirely extracted from the corpse. Somehow, the Raven Mocker extracts the victim's life essence from this gory banquet, adding the remaining years the person might have lived to its own lifespan. This is insane, and this is the method that the Raven Mocker uses to sustain itself. Legends recount stories of courageous warriors engaged in epic battles against these Raven Mockers, which is why I've included it in Cryptids of Wartime, highlighting the resilience and bravery of the Cherokee people in their struggle against these terrifying beings. These battles served as a testament to the unity, courage, and determination of the Cherokee community in the face of malevolent forces. The legacy of these battles continues to remind them of the importance of unity, spiritual strength, and cultural preservation to this day. The confrontations with Raven Mockers hold a significant place in Cherokee history, underscoring the bravery and resilience of their people in their ongoing fight against malevolent entities. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. It's just, a lot of these stories, like when you start reading them, even when you find new cryptids, you can really see the similarities between those new ones and other cryptids that we've already, you know, sort of been studying for a while now. Like, let's just say the giants, the Nephilim, and how they were consuming blood as well and eating humans and cannibalizing people and stuff like that, cannibalizing each other and stuff like that. It's very similar to these witches of Cherokee legend that are in a completely different part of the world, but exhibiting the same behavior, the consumption of humans, the cannibalization of humankind, because a lot of these things are kind of human, but not really human, and yet they're eating each other and humans. It's very interesting how all of these correlations exist between these cryptids. All right, we've got one more for you here. Our last story takes us to the time of the Korean War. In May 1951, during the Korean War, Private First Class Francis P. Wall and his regiment were stationed near Chorwon, approximately 60 miles north of Seoul. While they were preparing to shell a nearby village with artillery, an unusual sight suddenly caught the soldiers' attention in the hills. It appeared like a jack-o'-lantern descending slowly across the mountain, they said. What unfolded next, involving a pulsating and seemingly aggressive light, along with lingering, debilitating symptoms, would bewilder many for decades to come, even to this day. As the soldiers observed, the unidentified craft descended into the village just as the artillery airburst began to detonate. We further noticed that this object would position itself directly in the middle of an artillery airburst, yet remain completely unharmed. Wall later recounted during a 1987 interview with John P. Timmerman of the Center for UFO Studies. Then, abruptly, the object changed its course, as Wall described it. Initially, it glowed orange, but it transformed into a pulsating, brilliant blue-green light. Wall sought permission from his company commander to fire armor-piercing bullets from an M1 rifle at the object. When the bullets struck the craft's body, they produced a metallic ding sound. The object's behavior became even more erratic, zigzagging and flashing its lights on and off. Wall's recollection of the events that followed are even more peculiar. He claimed, "We were attacked," and described being subjected to a form of pulsating ray that emitted visible waves when aimed directly at them, similar to a sweeping searchlight, he said. He vividly remembered a burning and tingling sensation that swept over his body, as if he were being penetrated. In response, the soldiers hurried into underground bunkers, observing as the craft hovered above them and then rapidly shot off at a 45-degree angle. "It's that quick," he emphasized. "It was there, and then it was gone." 3 days after the incident, the entire company of men had to be evacuated by ambulance, with special roads created to transport those too weak to walk. When they finally received medical attention, they were diagnosed with dysentery and had an extremely high white blood cell count. According to Richard F. Haynes, a UFO researcher and former NASA scientist, these symptoms resembled the effects of radiation. During the Korean War, which concluded in July 1953, numerous men reported similar sightings of unidentified flying objects over the course of the 37-month conflict. There's a lot going on in Korea at this time. These objects often resembled flying saucers. An unofficial account suggests that as many as 42 of these sightings were corroborated by additional witnesses, averaging more than one per month during the entire war's duration, which is crazy. Initially, some researchers speculated that these sightings might be attributed to Soviet experiments involving German technology and anti-gravity research, which to me would not be surprising at all because of all the things that the Nazis were working on. Undoubtedly, some of that fell into the hands of the Russians during World War II. There's absolutely no way of knowing what kind of technology Russia possesses, and what kind of technology we possess, for that matter. What kind of technology is in Italy, in the Vatican? Because we know that the Nazis were working on anti-gravity. We know that they were trying to communicate with off-world sort of, I'm just going to call them aliens, but off-world creatures of some type. We know that they believed in those things. We know that it was a major focus of Hitler and his scientists to somehow connect with something in space and to develop the tech to be able to do that. So it's not surprising at all to me that some of this could be Soviet experiments. However, reports of Soviet UFO sightings over Korea in the years following the fall of the Soviet Union kind of discredit some of these theories, so nobody really knows what's going on. Additionally, the advanced technology described in some of the sightings made it improbable that they were the product of known military powers. They seem too technological to even be used by humans. Haynes proposed an alternative theory that these UFO sightings during the Korean War might be a result of an external interest in observing human behavior during military conflicts. Given the extensive range of sciences and technologies involved in warfare, an entity interested in understanding how different countries or races engage in war might collect information in this manner. So, an off-world creature, an alien, an extraterrestrial, something from another realm they may observe us as we do war using UFOs. It's important to note that the majority of reported UFO sightings, as much as 80%, are later determined to be conventional phenomena like clouds or human-made aircraft, rather than extraterrestrial in nature, according to this particular person. I don't think that's true at all. So, obviously, they admitted recently that they had been lying to us about UFOs and about aliens potentially, and we're seeing them pretty much every single day at this point. We're seeing something, so there's absolutely no way that you can say that 80% are just clouds or some natural phenomenon, because that they're just coming in, these sightings are coming in too frequently to be discredited in such a way, right? Like, let's be honest here. It's getting to the point where you can't just explain away every UFO sighting anymore. In Wall's case, the exact nature of what he witnessed that day remains unproven. We don't know what it is, but we don't know what it's not either. Without the testimony of other men from his regiment, it's challenging to ascertain whether they shared the same bizarre experience, even though many of them fell seriously ill. In the years following the war, Wall lost contact with many of his fellow soldiers. He recalled that after the incident, their company collectively decided not to file a report because they feared that they would all be perceived as insane. Despite the consistency of Wall's recollections of the UFO sighting, it is difficult to definitively establish what exactly happened. The conditions of combat were extremely stressful, but I don't think it's plausible that he experienced some kind of hallucination. Like, they like to say that soldiers who experience supernatural things are experiencing just some hallucination, some byproduct of trauma or PTSD or high stress. That's just not the way it really works. It's not just soldiers and people who are experiencing high levels of combat stress who are seeing these things. So that, to me, doesn't really fly, pardon the pun. But of course, for the sake of not ticking off all of the skeptics, yes, there was a constant threat to these soldiers' lives. It was a daily reality that there was a high possibility that they could die. So of course, stress may have played a factor. It's just not my personal opinion that that's what happened. But it's also possible that he experienced some kind of feverish delirium, a common occurrence in cases of severe dysentery, which would explain both the hallucinations and the elevated white blood cell count noted by Army doctors and Haynes. But what about the rest of his unit? They just all experienced the same exact thing at the same exact time, and it was all this feverish delirium? That doesn't really make sense to me either. In a later interview with Haynes, Wall mentioned discussing what he had seen with approximately 25 other men, but none of those others ever came forth or could be traced. In 2002, British researchers linked UFO sightings to Cold War hysteria and pointed out that the number of sightings decreased as radar technology improved. Did they, or did they just get better at hiding them, right? Or did the intelligence that was using UFOs learn to hide better, develop better technology? Do they adapt quicker than we do? Is their technology advancing faster? Are they able to mask themselves better as they see our technology advancing? Is this a possibility? Wall endured experiences during his time in Korea that left lasting scars until he passed away in 1999. One night, he navigated through a pitch-dark minefield, praying for his life along the way. Unfortunately, not all who attempted the same journey were as fortunate. According to his daughter, he went into the war as a happy person, but emerged as a completely different person altogether. The question of whether the reported UFO sightings, including Wall's, were a result of trauma-induced hallucinations or something more mysterious and deserving of further investigation remains an unsolved mystery. Yes, it does. You know, when you're researching this kind of stuff, it's so interesting to see, especially like the UFO and the alien talk. It's so interesting to see how outdated the lingo is now. Because before, it used to be very like, you know, we don't know if UFOs are real, and we don't know about aliens and extraterrestrials, but they're probably not real. That's just all stuff made up by conspiracy theorists and, you know, science fiction nerds and stuff like that. But now we've got them invading Miami all the time, and there's just hundreds of accounts of unidentified flying objects and potentially alien activity being reported by the government, the governments of the world, which is extremely weird, but part of the reality that we live in. Some of the animals even that are on the planet and in the oceans, we just have no idea how they even came to be, and they don't seem to exhibit the same sort of biological features that other animals exhibit. So we think maybe they're aliens, like octopus and stuff like that. Man, we have no idea what is going on. So I'm not one of those people who's going to be like, no, you didn't experience a UFO. You're just stressed out. That just doesn't seem fair to the witness. Discrediting these wartime stories in general doesn't seem fair to the witnesses. Because even though they are all going through something extremely stressful, that doesn't diminish their ability to experience the supernatural and the paranormal. And if anything, they are way closer to it than the rest of us, just because of the nature of reality that they're living in, where there is a lot of energy in the environment that they are in. There's a lot of destructive and violent energy thrashing about in that environment. Of course, that's where weird stuff is going to happen. But anyway, guys, I promise you we will be moving on to other topics next week, or on Thursday, depending on how my week goes. We will see. Obviously, all of my sources, I used a bunch of sources for this one because I used other people's stories and people's writings and stuff. All of those are going to be in the description. If you want to read them for yourself, feel free. Please don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Thank you all for everything that you guys have been doing lately. The podcast is growing, and it's all thanks to you guys. And I appreciate all your feedback. You guys were extremely kind to me in the comments on my last video when I was having a pretty bad day. You guys really lifted me up, and you have no idea what that means to me. So thank you guys all so much. I will see you on the next episode. Remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Later.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.